You know, delivering truly comprehensive financial services, not just at any level, but at a level that's actually high enough to increase the number of referrals you receive. Well, that's not easy, but you can do it. This is Mark Little. We're at the monthly advisor-only session for the Advisor Pack monthly program. This is the time each month where we get together, address questions that you've submitted during the course of the month, and the purpose of our time together each month is to work through your commitment to delivering truly comprehensive financial services. The Advisor Pack monthly program is for advisors who are moving in that direction. The key is you're committed to, at some point, delivering truly comprehensive financial services. The issue is primarily the transition. What do you need to be doing now to move closer and closer towards delivering this level of service? And of course, our focus in this program is under the premise that to get more referrals, you need to become more referable. So at the end of the day, we're talking about how to increase your referability, how to become indispensable to your best clients, which we call ideal clients. Now, we received a lot of questions this month from advisors all over the world. I selected two for us to focus on in our time together here. So let me show you the questions, and then as you go back and listen to the replay later, feel free to go back and jump to either one of these questions, and it's an archive. So over time, your objective is to get better and better and to move closer and closer to delivering comprehensive financial services at a level that's high enough that your clients will take notice, feel is remarkable, and will remark about you to everybody that they know. And so let's deal with the first question. I've heard you describe that client progress meetings are not for selling, that with truly comprehensive financial services, the only thing that I have to sell is my team's advice and the coordination of all the client's personal financial affairs. That is advisor packed. So far, so good. That's true. The advisor submitting this says, I get that. What I don't get is how do I get paid and what do I get paid for if I'm not selling investment services such as assets under management? Okay, so this question comes up a lot. What you need to know about this issue is that it's a paradigm shifting answer. So we've had advisors that we've worked with for a year or two and they still don't quite grasp this issue. So if I'm not, they get everything we talk about, everything's understandable in terms of what you're delivering in terms of service. However, somehow at the end of the day, the question still is, so when do I sell my investment products or when do I sell our asset under management services? And that represents a big don't get it. So when I saw this question come through, I thought, here's an opportunity to really address this issue head on. Talk about what you're paid for, what the clients value, what they're willing to pay the most for. And we've covered this a lot. This is actually at the heart and the essence of the advisor pact that we recommend that you make to every single one of your clients. PACT stands for an acronym, which is protection, attention, as in paying attention, paying close attention. C is for coordination, and T is for transparency. So those are the four PACT. That's the PACT. Those are the four items within your advisor PACT. We cover that a lot. Let's talk about the same issue, but in a little bit different way. The question here is, how do I get paid and what do I get paid specifically for? I think the way I want to start this conversation is to talk about what you're not going to be paid for. So I think the issue with a lot of the really big issues related to implementing what we're talking about here, which is comprehensive financial services, the issue is the transition. It's not it's very simple to understand. It's not hard to understand the objective that we talk about. What is difficult to really grasp for many of you is the transition. How do I get from where I am now to where I want to be? So let's talk about what you're not, specifically what you're not going to be compensated for. So the goal under our system is not to earn commissions or fees related to assets under management. Okay, so those concepts go away in our model. So this is truly a paradigm-shifting business model for most advisors that we work with. It's getting away from commissions and assets under management fees. You're not compensated for any financial products, so things such as insurance, things such as mutual funds or private money managers or asset management programs. You're not compensated for any of those. You're not going to be selling any particular financial service. Services. So if there's money to be made by a client implementing a recommendation from you or your team, you're not going to be compensated for any of that. That's going to be the implementation specialist, subject matter expert who actually does the implementing that makes that money. Now, your job on behalf of the client, and we'll get more on this later, is to watch the client's back, to protect them, to make sure that they're getting the very best financial product, the very best or most appropriate financial services that this client requires to accomplish their goals, but at the lowest cost. Your business model has changed from being compensated for implementing these things to watching the client's back and making sure that they get the best, most appropriate products and services, but at the lowest cost. You're the policeman on the beat, making sure the client is not paying too much for anything. The goal under our model is to be compensated by a significant, and I'm going to say flat fee, although I recognize when I say flat fee, a lot of you out there go sideways and think, wait a minute here, how are we going to implement that? So let's leave flat just as a conversation for possibilities. The point is, you're going to be making a significantly higher fee for truly comprehensive financial services than you've ever charged in the past. So you're going to be compensated for what? You're going to be compensated for your oversight, for the fact that you have a process and a system in place. We talk about the 10 client deliverables. We covered that last month. You're paid for having a process, identifying what needs to happen in a client's financial life, and your job is not necessarily to do everything or not necessarily to do all the 10 client deliverables. Your job is to make sure those things get done. It's this oversight role that is missing in clients' lives. And we have data on this. We can speak with authority when we say that clients complain that they don't feel like they have any oversight over their financial life. So your job shifts from financial advisor to financial leader. So it's your financial leadership and your oversight that clients are paying for, and they're paying significantly more for. They're not paying for any specific financial product or service from you. Now, why this is difficult to get your mind around, I'm not sure. All I can say is financial advisors, even after we talk about this, seem to keep coming back, you know, to the issue. You know, we cover all this kind of conversation and then only to have an advisor come back to us afterwards and say, okay, great. So when do we get paid for commissions and assets under management? And that's the point. You don't. You're shifting. It's a paradigm-shifting business model. You're getting away from that. The clients value your oversight, your financial leadership, and the fact that you've got a process in place to make sure that the client is on track. This is the advisor pact. You're not paid, for example, to provide market insights or market outlooks or any kind of market predictions. And maybe I'm projecting onto you my own transformation of my business. You know, I came from an investment background. So many of you come from different backgrounds. Some of you come from the investment world like I did, but many of you come from the insurance world. A number of you come from the tax world. You have been providing tax services in the past. Many of the advisors we work with are lawyers, and in the past have provided legal services, especially estate planning services. But it doesn't matter. Whatever you've done in the past, you're not paid for any of that anymore. You're not, like in my situation, what I used to do in client meetings, when clients would come in periodically for reviews, I would, you know, review their investments. I would provide market insights or market outlooks, kind of. I never really claimed to predict the future, but it's ironic as I look back on it, we did talk and spend a significant amount of our client meetings providing our opinion about what direction the market was heading. I mean, it was quite ridiculous in retrospect, but that's not what you're paid to do anymore. You're going to eliminate all of that, any kind of an investment review, any kind of a market review or market outlook. That's not what you're paid to do anymore. You are not compensated for anything other than overseeing each of your ideal clients' situations in order to ensure that they're on track to their goals. And if they're not on track, you're going to not allow any client to leave a meeting without getting your recommendations in writing about what it's going to take for them to get back on track. And so you're paid to help clients be on track to their goals and remain that way for the rest of their lives. That's what you're paid for. So it's important for you to think about what you're not going to be paid for under this paradigm shifting advisor packed business model. So that's what you're not going to be paid for. I challenge you to do this. As you are out there in the world, you know, it doesn't matter where you encounter people, but at some point you're going to encounter affluent people. Now, on a separate topic, you know, that is your job during the week, and some advisors have great difficulty getting their mind around this, that you're really not in the financial services industry. You're in the people business. So on a separate topic, I mean, you need to spend most of your week, I would say 80% of your week should be not in the office or not touching a computer, in essence, not crunching numbers or serving clients at this point. 80% of your time should be face-to-face or on the phone with potential clients. So your number one priority, I would agree with you, is serving your ideal clients. That's going to take a significant amount of time. But in the beginning, most of you don't have a lot of ideal clients. Just spoke with an advisor yesterday. He has something like 92 clients, of which only 6 are considered ideal clients. So in his business, he's been in the business 20 years, in his case, you know, it is a priority to serve his 6 ideal clients, but that doesn't take a lot of time. And that's also what we work on in this program with you to help you build and lead a deliverables team to take on that work. Your deliverables team of subject matter experts should be delivering the mechanics of truly comprehensive financial services. In other words, they do all the work. And again, this is what you're transitioning into, and we'll work together over time. But the bottom line is you need to be spending most of your week face-to-face or on the phone with potential clients, out of the office, interacting with people. And so as you encounter affluent people, try this in casual conversation sometime. I challenge you to ask this question. With the next affluent person that you bump into, it doesn't matter whether it's in a charitable setting, a charity that you volunteer for. It could be a backyard barbecue with neighbors. It could be at a PTA meeting. Wherever you are, where you bump into an affluent person, tell them you have data that suggests that affluent people dislike financial advisors. And simply ask them, why do you think that is? And encourage them to be candid. I think if you will ask this question a number of times in the next few weeks to affluent people, you know, don't sell them. Don't talk about what you do. Just it's okay to just ask this question of an affluent person. And I think if your experience is anything like ours, and this is where we get our data, we've asked this question to a lot of affluent people. I think you'll be surprised at their response and what their frustrations are. I think, first of all and foremost, I think they will agree with you. And they'll say things like, the meetings are boring, or they're irregular, or they're not valuable. Maybe financial advisors are always trying to sell something. Or maybe affluent people dislike financial advisors because they're not convinced they're actually very skilled. Or they're not comprehensive. They do one or two things, maybe money management, maybe yellow pad financial planning, perhaps estate planning, or maybe taxes. They might do one, possibly two things, but not every client, but the ideal clients that we're seeking actually are looking for an advisor who's comprehensive, and they cannot seem to find one anywhere at any price. They might share with you that the reason that affluent people dislike financial advisors is because the financial advisors' motives aren't exactly clear. They seem to have ulterior motives in these meetings. Sometimes they can put their finger on what it is. Maybe it's selling investments. Other times, it's just not clear. It's just clear that the motives aren't out on the table. You'll hear some affluent people say that advisors talk over their heads, talk about use investment jargon or financial services industry words and phrases that just don't mean anything to the average person. We hear this quite a bit. Financial advisors have sales breath, that they are actually trying to sell something, even though they're saying words to the contrary, and that the meetings focus on the markets, not on me, or whether I'm on track or not. And the fact that most advisors don't have a team. Affluent people, especially business owners, but corporate people as well, it's not an issue that they might necessarily put out on the table to let you know, but we've done research on this, and we know that affluent people distrust one-man bands. You know, the idea that one advisor is an expert in all areas of finance just as counterintuitive to most successful people, and that most financial advisors don't talk to the other advisors. They don't actually collaborate to pull everything together. So if a financial advisor makes a recommendation, the idea that in advance of that recommendation, they've spoken with the client's accountant or the client's lawyer or any of the client's other financial professionals, you know, this just doesn't exist. And this is a clue to affluent people that an advisor is not truly comprehensive, and therefore this is something they don't like about financial advisors, is the lack of collaboration, and therefore don't seem capable of coordinating everything. And some clients clearly are looking for an advisor to coordinate everything. We hear clients say financial advisors are boring and they really dislike the conversations. Advisors don't focus on things that are controllable. They tend to focus on the markets and, you know, market prognostications and kind of giving an outlook of, you know, where we are in the economy, and rather than focusing on things you can control, like the client's budget or making better financial choices about, you know, maybe it's a decision whether to pay cash or finance or lease a new vehicle. Any of these planning issues, these are not the conversations that advisors typically have with their clients. And therefore, clients dislike the fact that we are talking about things in the valuable time we have together. They seem to be talking with most financial advisors about things you can't control anyway. That they dislike advisors because they focus the conversation on things that the client cares very little about. In the end, clients dislike financial advisors oftentimes because they don't seem competent, they don't seem capable, they don't seem worthy of trust. And so whatever the affluent people tell you about what they feel affluent people dislike about financial advisors, bear in mind, this is a very disarming question. You're asking a third-person question. You're making a statement. We have data that suggests that affluent people dislike financial advisors. Then you're asking a person, an affluent person, why do you think that is? It's in third person. It's very safe. They can kind of predict why others feel this way. But know this. This affluent person is sharing their own personal beliefs. They are betraying their own thoughts. Whatever they say about why they feel affluent people dislike financial advisors, they're in essence telling you two things. Number one, they're agreeing with you. It's important that you recognize that that this affluent person is in essence saying, by answering the question, is saying, yes, I agree with you, that affluent people dislike financial advisors. And then the things that they're sharing are actually their own opinions. So you are actually getting a very good insight as to why an affluent person feels like they don't like financial advisors. So that's valuable information. Now, what should your response be in this casual conversation with an affluent person? Well, I've done this many times. You respond by saying, exactly. I think so too. That's why last year, and we're just about to enter the new year, so assuming you made this commitment this year, very soon in the next few weeks, you'll be able to say, that's why last year I completely transformed my business. It was to resolve problems like those and to provide oversight for clients regarding these very issues you're describing. I redesigned my business to specifically eliminate every one of these issues you're talking about because we realized that our best clients wanted us to defend them against these very things. While at the same time coordinating everything, that means every financial recommendation and every financial professional in the client's life is coordinated around an overarching strategy so that everything's well aligned. We realize that clients wanted us to pay close attention and to proactively recommend course corrections to remain on track to the financial objectives, not to reactively find out about changes in a client's life, but to proactively pay close attention and to provide complete transparency regarding all financial products and services. You know, it's addressing the data that we have that most clients don't really know what they're paying for all their financial products and services. So you redesigned your business last year to provide complete transparency so that every client of yours knows exactly what they're paying for every financial product and every financial service. And the main focus is in the business now to protect our clients' financial assets while remaining on track to the goals. It's just this whole notion of having the client's back and defending against potential conflicts of interest. Now, this is advisor packed, by the way. This description, however you want to have it in describing, you know, protection, attention, coordination, transparency, this is a much higher level conversation with a potential client or with anybody who's just trying to get a better understanding of what you do and what differentiates you from every other financial advisor. You are well differentiated with truly comprehensive financial services because clients know from their own experience in dealing with financial advisors that they cannot find an advisor anywhere else doing all of these things that you're promising to do. They can't find an advisor anywhere at any price to do these things. And therefore, your business at this point, having committed to and beginning to implement the Advisor Pact, represents a financial services monopoly in your community. You're doing things that nobody else can in your community can provide in terms of services to these clients. And so these clients recognize, if they truly understand what you do, they recognize that they can't get these services anywhere else in their community. So there is a gap. There is a chasm. There is something in this business model, this paradigm-shifting business model, which represents a gap in the minds of advisors that's very difficult to fill. And so we call this crossing the chasm to Advisor Pact because we realize there are aspects of this journey that are a problem. It's a gap that advisors find difficult to fill. And now what is that? How do you, as an advisor-packed advisor who's trying desperately to accelerate your journey to implementing truly comprehensive financial services, let's talk exactly about what the chasm is and what to do to address it. And to identify what differentiates this business model, truly comprehensive financial services made through an advisor packed with every one of your best clients, how does this business model, how does this paradigm shifting business model differ from clients' experiences with every other financial advisor that they've ever met out there? So let's talk about the chasm. Let's talk about what clients view our industry to be now. Let's talk about how you move to a more profitable financial services business model. So let's call this on the left traditional financial services. And let's call this on the right truly comprehensive financial services. So when clients are thinking about financial advisors and when they're describing what they dislike about financial advisors, what they're thinking of is a selling environment, that these are salespeople. And it doesn't matter whether it's commissions or assets under management, financial advisors are viewed by affluent people as salespeople. And so that's the chasm. How do you jump from this sales role to truly comprehensive financial services? Well, the leap is, and this is what I want you to leave this conversation thinking about, is how do you get away from selling and get into the business of providing oversight? See, this is what clients intuitively realize is not happening in their financial life right now. There's nobody who's overseeing the actual recommendations being made to the client. So in past sessions, we've talked about the difference between your oversight team of subject matter experts versus the client's implementation team of professionals who are actually doing the work and implementing the work. And it's this oversight. It's you building a team of oversight subject matter experts in all areas of personal finance. That is to say tax, financial planning, estate planning, insurance, and money management or investment management, whichever term you use in your country. Those are the five areas that you need an oversight expert in charge of so that when recommendations are made, that there's oversight over those recommendations before the client sees the recommendation. So if a client's insurance agent recommends some kind of insurance, then the insurance subject matter expert on your team, who's an oversight expert, is going to pass judgment on that recommendation. If, let's say, the insurance subject matter expert oversight person on your team makes an insurance recommendation, well, it's the other subject matter expert oversight people on your team, the tax, the financial planning, the other experts who review that insurance recommendation made by your team and provides peer review and asks all these piercing questions internally, challenging the recommendation to make sure that every recommendation is tested by fire and you're providing proper oversight on everything that the client is, every action item, every recommendation made to the client. There's oversight. And the key principle here is you cannot provide oversight over yourself. So whoever's making the recommendation, what's different about your model, and once clients really grasp this chasm or grasp that you've leaped this chasm, that's what they value most, that there is never a recommendation that's made that hasn't been challenged by some other financial professional on your team. And therefore, the client is protected. Everything recommended is understood by the client to be not only well aligned with the overarching strategy, because now there is an overarching strategy developed by your team of subject matter experts, but your team of oversight subject matter experts are active on the job, making sure that every recommendation is in the client's best interest. So that is the chasm, jumping from selling to providing oversight. and at the mass affluent level, where the most of the affluent people are in the world, there are millions of multimillionaires in this category. For this oversight, what's another paradigm shifting aspect of this business model is you're providing, let's call it a flatter fee. If you're hung up on a flat fee, let's just call it a flatter fee. You're not charging basis points. You're not charging assets under management. You are charging a very large administrative fee to make the advisor pact with each client and provide this oversight and have a system and a process in place and make sure nothing falls through the cracks and make sure that every recommendation is well aligned and in the client's best interest with no potential conflicts of interest. This is what the mass affluent want. There are also highly affluent people out there, we're talking millions and millions of dollars, who this is a business model not only that appeals to them, but you know they're actively seeking this, and that is for a flat fee. The highly, highly affluent, it very much appeals to them to pay a flat fee. Now, what kind of flat fee? That's entirely up to you. We have advisors for the deliverables checkpoints that we talk about in the Advisor Pack program, you know, delivering truly comprehensive financial services the way we teach it. We have advisors that are paying $50,000 a year or more in U.S. dollars for these services. So whether your clients would pay you $20,000 a year, $30,000 a year, whatever the fee, the larger the client, the flatter the fee. It could be a very, very large fee. But the more affluent, the more flat they're looking for the fee to be, or at least I should say, the more appealing your business is, the flatter your fee is. So on this side of the equation, we have a financial salesperson. On this side, what we're really describing in leaping this chasm, what you've done when you jump into this world is you've shifted from being a salesperson to being the financial leader of your client's life. You make sure everything gets done, everything that should get done will get done, you'll make sure, and everything will be watched very closely. You are going to coordinate everyone and every recommendation. You'll make sure that everything's fully transparent and that the client is, in fact, fully protected. That is our promise. And so on the traditional financial services side, you're getting whatever your compensation is. Let's call that 1X compensation, whatever you're making now. What clients are willing to pay on this side is 10X. I mean, something substantially larger. It's hard for clients, for advisors somehow to realize the value that making this leap to the world of oversight and to becoming the financial leader of a client's life, how much more valuable that is to the client, and how the clients are more willing to pay a higher compensation for this role. And this is the advisor pact that we are talking about on nearly every one of these sessions that we talk about. Every month we get together, and somehow, some way, we're moving towards this model on the right, the advisor pact model. So that's the visual. So what do you tell clients, or what do you tell an affluent person who's just curious about what you do? After understanding what your paradigm shift is in your own mind as an advisor, now you've got to articulate it to others, in a potential clients especially, in a way that not only do they understand it, but in a way that is compelling, it's clear, and it's conversational, and makes perfect sense to them. And I just want to give you some ideas of things you can say to a potential client once you've made the commitment to leap that chasm and jump into this world of oversight and financial leadership. You, as we've talked about, you describe that you've completely changed your business model. Now, this is particularly effective with existing clients that kind of know how you've been operating in the past. As a matter of fact, you know, this may be an issue that you have to deal with existing clients, because they are so accustomed to how you do business, it's going to take them a little bit of adjustment to understand the new way you're doing business versus the old way that they've already experienced. And you start by explaining that you've completely changed your business model, that you've actually created a business within a business. And I think this, from a paradigm shifting standpoint, makes the transition much easier for you. So whatever you've been doing in the past, keep doing it. So if you're growing at a particular rate, if you have an investment-focused business or an insurance-focused business or a tax-focused business or maybe in a legal business, a lawyer, law firm, just keep doing what you're doing. Call it survival income. Call it doing something that you understand very well because you've been doing it for years. But the point is, keep doing what you're doing. There's no reason for you to slow down your revenue stream just because you've made this commitment to deliver and offer truly comprehensive financial services. It's perfectly all right to keep your business currently running in place and continue offering the services that you've been offering in the past. But to explain to clients that you now have started a new business, but this new business is a business within your existing business, and that you've listened to clients, you know what they want, and you're now able to do a whole lot more for a small number of clients, that you're creating a business in a business for a small community of clients. You've built a team of subject matter experts, and these are the subject matter experts in all areas of personal finance. You've built this team to coordinate all the personal financial affairs for a small community of clients. That's this business within a business, the new business. And I think it's very compelling, and I encourage you to set this goal. You know, once we acquire a certain number of ideal clients, it could be 20. We have advisors we're working with that have it as their goal to acquire 25 ideal clients. I set it as my goal back in 1999 to acquire 100 ideal clients. I think the sweet spot where we have our advisors looking at this and doing their own, running their own numbers and making a decision on this issue, how many ideal clients do I want? The sweet spot is 50. So whatever the number, to communicate clearly with existing clients that with this new business within a business, once we acquire 50 ideal clients, whatever the number, we're closing our business to new clients so that we can then focus 100% of our time on this small ideal client community and coordinating all of their personal financial affairs. No longer are we going to spend even 1 minute in client acquisition. That's just time that we could have otherwise spent serving our clients. So once we have our certain number of ideal clients, let's say 50, just to pick a number, then my team and I, 100% of our attention shifts and focuses on serving our ideal clients at a very high level. So let's do a compare and contrast. You're talking to an existing client. You're trying to make them understand the old way have always been serving them and doing business versus this new business, this new way. You can tell your existing clients, listen, I used to evaluate your situation, recommend financial products and services. I was paid by commissions, either financial product commissions or as a percentage of assets under management, whatever. I was paid to find suitable products and services and to implement those, and that's how I got paid. And then I was paid to sit down with you periodically to discuss your investments or to discuss whatever your primary skill is. It could be to discuss your taxes or to discuss your estate plan or to discuss, you know, whatever it is you've been doing. So I'm kind of positioning this the way my conversation went with clients because I came from the investment side. But the point is, you clearly define what you've done in the past in a way that clients are going to resonate with. That in the past, you were paid to sit down with clients and provide a market outlook, to make recommendations, changes from time to time. Whatever the case in your situation, whatever you've done up to this point, you're trying to create a compare and contrast in a way that will resonate with existing clients, describing exactly what you've done in the past. Then you make the paradigm shift. You explain, with this new business within a business, now for every ideal client, we create a comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy created by the team that you now have, and that you coordinate all personal financial affairs, not just those issues that in the past you've dealt with, those narrow fields of finance, but everything. That you provide oversight over all the financial people in your client's life. You've got an oversight team, and that you ensure that every financial recommendation is perfectly aligned with the overall plan, because now we have a comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy against which we assess every action item and recommendation that a client needs to make to stay on track. And we're highly proactive. In the new business, we pay very close attention proactively as to whenever a client drifts off course. And understand this, every client drifts off course. Every financial strategy at some point drifts off course. That's why we recommend you meet with clients every 4 months so that you can be proactive and identify which how clients have drifted off course. And so proactively, you're identifying this situation, and at that point, you would recommend course corrections. Whatever it takes to get back on track, the client can count on you at every interaction that you have with the client to receive recommendations, not only identifying where you've drifted off course, but to make those recommendations that are going to be required to get back on track. We watch your back for potential conflicts of interest. And in the end, our job is to protect you. Clients don't hear this from potential advisors that they hold themselves out as protecting the client and that they've got a process and a system in place and a team in place designed to pay close attention to protect the client's assets and to protect the client's financial strategy from any of the assaults that could throw things off track. So the promise is to every potential client that now in this new business within our business, we have a team who's dedicated and we have a process in place to get your entire financial house in perfect order and to keep it that way forever. So I used to be a subject matter expert delivering a narrowly defined service, and you list one or more of the services that you've provided in the past. And now what I do is I deliver truly comprehensive financial services. I oversee all of the areas of personal finance in a client's life, but through a team of subject matter experts that I acquired. And so therefore, we have a very specific ideal client profile. We've documented the profile of the client that we serve best. And I'm telling you, once we have acquired 50 ideal clients, I won't be accepting any new clients. So it's very helpful if you can make a statement like this, because not only is it very clear what the change is and why what you're doing is worth more now than it was in the past, but also how it's in your existing client's best interest to get you to your final number, whatever it is, 50, 75, 100 ideal clients, whatever your goal, if you will put it out there that after you achieve that number, you're not going to be accepting any new clients, you'll find increasingly that existing clients will help you get to that number. They see how it's in their best interest to have your attention focused 100% on them and the small community of ideal clients. So that's the first question. With the 1 minute we have remaining, it's going to be quick. I've got the question. I'm trying to complete my budget for the next year. Do you have any advice? Yes. In 1 minute, let me run through my advice for you as you're thinking about next year. As you create your budget and you're looking over your finances, projecting them for next year, do not stop the process until you know these three specific numbers. First, how much money is required to run your business? Just make sure you understand exactly how much it's going to take in the next 12 months to sustain your business. The rent or you know, whatever it costs to be remain in your offices, the payroll cost, all your business expenses, including your taxes, make sure you know that number. That's the number one number. Second number is how much money is it going to be required to fund all your future goals? This is, you're doing your own financial planning or hiring a team, which we recommend, to do this for you. The amount of money that you need to set aside in the next 12 months in order to be fully on track to funding all your future goals, this puts you in alignment with your clients. This is what you're doing for them, and it's important that you not only know this number, but it's important for you to be able to look every client in the eye and say, I'm on track to my own financial goals as well. And third, the third and final number that I encourage you to keep going until you get to the number is to make sure to include how much money you need to live a good life now. The amount of money that you're going to need this year to live a fabulous lifestyle. So just to sum it up, don't stop the budgeting process until you know specifically in the next 12 months how much money you're going to need to run your business, how much money you're going to need to fund your future goals, and how much money you're going to need to live a great life now. Once you have these three numbers, that's your budget. Now you know what you need to earn next year, and now you've just set a goal for next year in a way that truly inspires you. These are the numbers, when you add them together, which are the numbers that represent the effort and the sacrifice you're willing to make in order to achieve these three numbers. And that's really, at the end of the day, what we're trying to accomplish. You achieving your ideal life and your ideal business and structuring everything so that you fully understand how much money you need to make next year to accomplish everything you want in life financially. So that is it for this month's Advisor Packed session. We really enjoy working with you. And keep your questions coming in. Submit questions. Every month I select a handful that we can deal with on this session together. And until next month, I'm Mark Little. We wish you all the best in implementing.